Hello, everybody, and welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury. Thank you so much for joining us today and making TeacherCast your home for professional development. On today's episode of Digital Learning Today, we're going to talk all about student engagement, but in a different way than you might be used to. My guest today has recently created, with her team at Discovery Education, an entire pamphlet all about student engagement from the teacher's point of view, from the student's point of view, from the administrator's point of view, and even from the parent's point of view. And we're going to talk all about that on today's episode. So stick around for an amazing episode. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is the first time you're checking out our show. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. You can find us over on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and wherever you guys get your podcasts. And all of our videos are found over at teachercast.net/YouTube. Hope you hit that like and subscribe button. Thank you guys for making TeacherCast your home for professional development. My guest today is the Instructional Strategy Director at Discovery Education, where recently they published a brand new insights report called Fueling Learning Through Engagement. It is a pleasure to welcome on today Ms. Nicole Santora. Nicole, how are you today? Welcome to TeacherCast.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you. So happy to be here this evening.
I am so excited to have you here. You know, as we are getting ready to have the new calendar year come up, many teachers are trying to figure out what is going on in their classrooms. Many instructional coaches are trying to figure out how to make a difference in their school districts. And it seems like one of the things that we're missing right now is student engagement, trying to figure out ways to keep kids occupied, try to keep kids engaged, and how to make our students more, you know, in tune with what we're learning. Yeah. You guys over at Discovery Education are doing a lot of research on that. First of all, talk to us a little bit about Discovery Education and how can we be able this year to help our students become more engaged in their learning.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of work with specifically student engagement. So we put out the insights report that really took a laser beam focus, you know, went across the country and did a lot of research with a third party around what is student engagement and ended up gathering all this data. And we ended up coming to the conclusion that, one, we don't have a shared definition on student engagement, which creates barriers to really addressing it and to driving it and to building, you know, effective, engaging products. And also even from a teacher lens, as a former educator, as a former coach, also what that looks like within the classroom. So that was the first big thing. Second, it's hard to measure, right? Classrooms always have a lot of data, right? We talk about testing data, the different types of data and how they're used through inquiry cycles to drive improvement. But engagement, one, because we don't have a shared definition, but two, it's really hard to measure that, right? And we don't have an aligned way to do that. And then the third piece is really that we all know that student engagement is really important, but we just don't know what to do with it, right? And that was one thing that the insights report came back, and we had all of that kind of that data that we need to investigate a bit more. But on the product side, right, on the curriculum side, what I've been working on with teams is to really define it, is to really identify examples and find those product examples, right, those product design features, those behaviors within the classroom, whether that's from a teacher or a student, what that looks like. So it's been really interesting. It's a really interesting time in ed tech and the edu landscape, whether that's because of kind of I wouldn't say new developments in learning design, but I would say elevated laser beams on learning design and HQIM kind of curriculum development. We know that states now have a lot more, they've always had a lot of control, but we know that they have a lot more control. So just even seeing the variances across state lines, which is really interesting. Post-COVID has really created a really interesting landscape where engagement is really important because we have seen attendance scores dip kind of in the years after kind of, you know, 2020. So really interesting time with ed tech, especially with AI and all of that. So engagement is like really at the center of that. So wanted to take a bit more of a lens on that.
Well, let's start right there, right? When we're talking about engagement, we really do have a double-sided mirror. Mm-hmm. Do teachers think that their students are engaged? And do students think that their teachers are creating engaging materials? How are you defining the term engagement on both of those sides?
Yeah, I mean, I think even between teachers and students, there's a lot of variance. And I think even between teachers and administrators, right, we found that there's a lot of variance to that as well. So, you know, internally, and when you go back to like the 1980s, or even I think it was more codified at kind of 2000s, was looking through student engagement through the three dimensions, right? And there's a lot of pitfalls. There's a lot of instructional illusions right now around, you know, thinking that entertainment or kind of behavioral engagement is really deeper learning. And we know that it's not, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a big piece where it's like, if you take a multidimensional look into student engagement from a behavioral lens, from an emotional lens or an affective lens, and then also a cognitive lens, right? You can start seeing the effects, right? The behaviors that students need to exhibit, or teachers also need to drive towards, or products need to really tap into in order to move the needle on the engagement spectrum. So that was one thing that our internal team started doing. We started doing smaller, what we call learn cycles, which are basically inquiry-based internal learning sessions, where we took the lens, we ended up looking at research, kind of looking at that lens, auditing our products and saying, well, how do we really drive engagement, whether it's behavioral, whether it's the affective, or whether it's the cognitive engagement there?
You know, coming at this from a teaching point of view, it is really difficult these days. I know, like right now I'm teaching middle school. I go into my classroom. I have what I consider a very engaging lesson. We start off with a Google Classroom thing where they're asking questions. We do an activity. We come back together. Some days it's easy. Some days, no matter how many times you're dancing in front of them, they just don't talk to you. They just sit there and they look at you like, all right, is the bell going to ring yet? Or my even favorite one, a couple of days ago, I had my superintendent in the room.
Lucky you.
10 minutes before the bell, half the class stood up and waited by the door.
Yeah.
In front of the superintendent. So it seems like sometimes you're trying really hard.
Yeah.
But it is that 1 versus 100 mentality.
Yeah.
What advice do you have when you look at this whole document here and you're trying to give advice to teachers, especially during the holidays, what advice do you have for engaging students, creating engaging lessons? How do you do it?
Yeah. God, that's a very big question. So, I mean, I think we need to break it down, right? And I think we need to look at it also. I think teachers have the hardest job, right? So those little pieces where it's like, you can have one good lesson, right? Or like what you think is a good lesson too, right? As a educator, and then the next day, all of it falls apart. There's all these kind of
period. It all falls apart.
It's just like, it does. It's just, especially around the holidays. I mean, I remember being an administrator also trying to get teachers and students to Thanksgiving. And then there's that December, right, where you're just trying to get to the holiday break. So I do remember that. I feel like I still feel that. I feel that now. So please know that it's right around the corner. Just get to the holiday break. But it's interesting with the engagement piece. So I think before I even give examples of what we can do, I think we do need to define it even more. So if we're saying that engagement, right, is through the three dimensions, so we know that it's complex and we know that it really is about students interacting through those lenses, right? Let's unpack each of those dimensions even further. So if we're thinking about behavioral, we ended up using basically a little bit of a tool internal. So if we're thinking about behavioral engagement, right? Let's think about it through the domains of participation, focus, and ownership of learning, right? So if that's what we're going to look through, right? And we're going to look at the different dimensions. If I was an administrator or a coach, fellow coach to fellow coach, right? You're looking for observable behaviors, right? What is the student doing in the classroom from a behavioral engagement? Now, it's funny, I was just reading the first chapter of the Instructional Illusions book that came out. I feel like lots of people are talking about it. And I'm a big Carl Hendricks fan. But I did have some, as a coach, I put my coach's hat on when I was reading that chapter. And that chapter in particular really focuses on the cognitive, on the metacognitive piece, right? The deeper learning piece, which is so critical. But let's go to my decade of coaching teachers within New York City. And I would say, you know, there were teachers where 35% of my time was just trying to get them to manage a classroom, right? Just getting them to get students in a seat. That's a reality of the classroom where they couldn't even think about planning deeper learning or getting students to think about learning, just because the behavioral engagement, kind of the order that was happening in the classroom, we know that is conducive for learning, just wasn't there, right? So for strategies, when you're thinking about that behavioral engagement, it might end up being like certain things where you are more or less driving sustained attention or building active learning rather than passive learning, right? For that dimension and that domain of learning. So that's behavioral.
It really is minute by minute, I find. I mean, look, I'm somebody who I teach 10 classes over 2-day cycle. Yeah. One period will work. One period won't work. I even find that 7:30 in the morning doesn't work.
Yeah.
8:30 in the morning kind of sort of works. By 9:30 when the third period kids come in, okay, the jokes are working. The teacher charm is there. The blue eyes are going. All of those things. Then the next day comes and 7:30.
Yeah.
So I find I need to actually, instead of teaching two different lessons over the AB schedule, I'm doing like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Pun intended. Yeah. Right. Because you have to go for the different times of the day at points. Yeah. And then you're also dealing with the different characters in the class, right? I mean, we've all had kids where they come in and they say, can I go to do this? Can I sit here? And if you say no,
yes,
there goes your class.
And that,
so on one hand, do you have order
or
do you not? Yeah. In that, sometimes that's your engagement. Like, is that one person going to be upending your class? Now, I'm curious about the report here, because not only are you looking at this from a student point of view and a teacher point of view, but you've also got some data points sprinkled throughout here about what superintendents say, which I think is fascinating to read this, since they're in charge of the classrooms, but they're not actually in the classrooms. Yeah. And look, we all know that when the superintendent does walk in, everything seems to work wonderful, right? So what they're necessarily seeing in the classrooms isn't the day-to-day. What did you guys learn by meeting not only with the people who are in the classrooms every day, but the administrators throughout this process?
I think the biggest thing was that engagement is important to them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when we looked at the report and we looked at the data as far as the, you know, the different personalities within that, right? Whether it was students, whether it was teachers, whether it was administrators, like higher up, there was variance in the percentages of how they valued it, but yet everybody did agree that it was really critical. It was just interesting to see that there was no alignment around that, you know? And I think, you know, to your point before, even about it could be the time of day, it could be the specific student, right? Like how complex this is, how it blends into other aspects of teaching as well, whether that is the learning design, which is the cognitive piece, or even the emotional piece. I know, like, a lot of times we think about the emotional engagement piece to be really focused on interest, right? Like students should love what they're learning, of course. But at the same time, you know, did you love everything that you learned? Do I love everything that I know? And it really is about ensuring that, for when I was working with teams around it, sure, the interest is a competency within the larger kind of dimension, but there's also a lot around collaboration and belonging, right? The community aspect. We as humans do get a lot of motivation, get a lot of engagement through working together. There's also the emotional safety piece, which is something when we're looking contextually at where we are as an education system post-COVID, right? Coming back to schools, like, gosh, like what an incredible, you know, years from now, we're going to look back and we're going to see that and we're going to look at the effects of this. But those are two other kind of dimensions within the larger, you know, student engagement, emotional engagement piece that I think is really critical. And it varies. Now, I don't think superintendents necessarily take that lens, right? But when we're looking and we're gauging and, you know, I don't see those as not part of engagement. I see those almost as prerequisites to the deeper learning that needs to happen, right? So, and that students really, like, what we're really trying to do with students is to get them to love learning and to be motivated and to be lifelong learners, and to engage with all that content. And that is a part of that is not just necessarily getting them to work through difficult problems. That's getting them, there's a metacognitive piece to that, right? Getting them to think about their thinking, right? And being able to navigate their thinking, like that's that independent learning that we're really driving towards. In addition to like getting them to use cognitive strategies. I did some consultancy work with, I have some principals across the country that I still work with who are I love so much. They're doing amazing things. And one series that I just did with a school in New Mexico was all about just cognitive strategies for their high school students, like thinking about thinking, visible thinking, right? Like, and we could bring the whole grading conversation into this too, but like, what do we value, right? And what we really should be valuing is that cognitive engagement piece. That is the learning. That is what we want students to do. But sometimes we get held up on homework scores or multiple choice questions or whatever it is that we think are more or less metrics of success of student learning. So
is this a generational thing that we're running into? You know, I'm at that point now where I am 4 years old, and yes, my triplets at home are now the age of the kids that I'm teaching. I teach 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. You have a statistic here in this pamphlet that says less than half the students believe that their teachers know that they are engaged, which to me is a disconnect, right? Like if the students are saying the teacher is not in connect, like doesn't even realize that I'm not connected with them. They're just going through the motions. You know, this seems like this is a September issue. I know that I can't walk into my class tomorrow, turn on the light switch, and a completely new curriculum happens.
Yeah.
You need to build those relationships over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to start that engagement, or you need to start the show sometimes as I look at it, in that first couple of days of class to kind of give the kids, this is the day.
Yep.
If the kids are not engaged in that first couple classes, it's going to be a long year for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, and we talk about this in the coaching world. Those first couple class periods, you are setting the stage, not for the week, but for 180 days.
Yeah.
So how do we support this? And as coaches, how do we teach our teachers this? Is there a professional development that we can give our teachers if they don't realize what is going on right in front of them?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the biggest barrier, right, to student learning is the fact that, you know, the teaching profession is so hard, right?
Yes.
Teachers have the hardest job. They don't have time necessarily to always do that kind of that learning that they need to do. Even in my 10th year of teaching, I was still like, God, I have so much to learn, right? Because it's just such a complex space. There's always something to learn. You always have different individuals in front of you, right? There's always variations of how you're learning. So, I mean, I think it's impossible to think like, I mean, we would need to completely shift the system around how we're valuing professional learning and integrating that into a day, right? But I do think, and then I'll speak to this as a teacher, as someone who is in the classroom for 10 years, as someone who is a Baltimore City teacher, a New York City teacher, I was always very transparent with my students. That transparency I found was engaging, right? I said, I'm never going to assign homework unless I use it right the next day. I never want you to sit into a classroom not knowing what this author is or what they did and somebody else does, right? I want you to be able to do this type of co-construction writing with me because you're going to have to do it on the state exam, right? When you get into the state exam, I want you to go to the last page and dump all the literary devices on that page so that you can use them later when you're using cognitive strategies. Like there was a lot of real talk. Now I taught high school. I didn't teach first grade. But that I've always found a lot of success around the why and the way the brain works. And grading, don't even bring grading up, Jeff, in this conversation, because I think the way we do grading is so backwards and wrong for teachers, for students, for the whole system. It doesn't mean anything. They're made up grades. If we took a competency skills-based approach to the grading and actually did student profiles, actually supported teachers through very like clear metrics that are binary, yes or no, so that we can actually build ladders of learning across time. Mm-hmm. I think we'd be in a different space as an educational society.
Well, you bring that up, but you consider from kindergarten through 9th grade, grades don't matter. there's no GPA, there's no ranking, there's no this or that. I mean, even where my kids are going to school, it doesn't matter what they get because next year they're going to be in the next grade and there's no consequence for all of that.
Yep.
So how do you judge teachers? But that's another conversation completely altogether, right? but that is the rub, right? Like what as a teacher can you hold over somebody to keep them going?
Yeah.
If you're listening out there, how many times have you walked into a classroom, asked a question, and before you even finish the sentence, some kid goes, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then you're like, but think about the answer, right? And how many times have I sat there in my class going, no, we're doing critical thinking right now. We're trying this. Like you have a Google machine in front of you. Look up the, like, I'm going to show you how to find the answers here. Don't just shut me down before I finish the question mark.
Yeah.
And that is difficult.
Yeah.
As an instructional coach, I think one of the hardest things that we can do, and I don't even know if this is our place, but could you imagine me as an instructional coach walking up to you as a teacher going, Nicole, I got to be honest, they don't care about what you're selling. I mean, we could talk about instructional strategies. We could talk about standards and grading, and we could talk about whole child, but they clearly don't care what you're talking about. And I don't know, is there a place in instructional coaching where that even
happening? I think that happens all the time. I
it's honestly evaluative, right?
But that's where the definition, right? That's where us defining and us starting to categorize different behaviors so that we can understand them in order to diagnose them and put a strategy in place. Because it is very different, the classroom where a teacher is just talking at students, right? Where nobody is actually picking up a pen or a pencil or opening a laptop, and the whole class is a seminar class. That is different than, for example, students not feeling safe in order to make a mistake, right? And those would have different, we would end up addressing those differently. We would collect that data, right? We would do inquiry, like continuous improvement cycles with that, which is different than also students reading, or, I mean, I am also a literacy expert. Like how many times have I gone into a classroom and it's like, okay, we're going to read this and you're going to now identify the main idea. And so many students are just like, I don't know. And some of the texts are hard. Yeah. Sinners in the hands of an angry God, like try to get the main idea out of that. Like that's so hard. You got to unpack that, right? And that active, that metacognitive, that cognitive kind of unpacking that needs to happen in front of students. So I do think that happens all the time, Jeff. I think coaches say they're not interested in what you're doing, or teachers walk out being like, God, that was a terrible lesson. Nobody cares what I'm talking about. But we can't let teachers feel like that. We have to go in and say, well, let's gather data, right? Let's diagnose and let's categorize and figure out what aspect of engagement. Sure, they all work together, but in order for us to intervene, right? In order for us to plan, I'm going to say lowercase intervention, not an actual intervention, but lowercase intervention, right? We need to end up changing the behaviors then, teacher behaviors that'll affect the student behavior. And that's where progress happens at that. And that's us talking as coaches, but from a discovery education, like that's what the lens that we took when we were like, well, what are our products? How are our products educative and how do our products drive change, right, in behaviors for the teacher and then also for the student within these three dimensions?
One of the things that you found, and this rings true for at home, this rings true in my classes, I believe the stat you had was 91% of middle schoolers say that they feel nervous asking questions in class. Every single day, hey, Nicole, what do you think about this? And the eyes go down. I don't know. And I'm just waiting. Or my favorite one is they just stare at you.
Yeah.
And as a teacher, I don't know what to do. Like, because if I go to the next person right away, okay, I've now taught them that they don't have to, they can just ignore me.
Yeah.
Right. Or if I try to force it out of them, well, then I feel crappy.
Yeah.
Like, then I feel like I'm doing something wrong. But at the same time, how do you handle it when the kids are just looking at you like, I'm not even going to give you the chance today.
Yeah. I mean, that's when you have to change what type of collaboration it looks like, right? Middle school is such, we were chatting about this before we jumped on the podcast, like that developmentally, the middle school time is an intense time. We've all been through it. The social aspect is probably the number one factor that is affecting them. The social aspect, not the school aspect, right? And I think when we're planning learning experiences for every, you know, grade band, I think when we're thinking about the middle school student, right, like full group conversations are a really stressful endeavor for them. So planning different types of collaboration where you are building safety across time is really important. And that ladder I use when I was coaching administrators, like the ladder analogy, I use it all the time, even internal discovery, like the ladder analogy of learning across time is so important. So even when we're thinking about collaboration or like sharing out or how we are engaging students in conversation in the classroom, it will look different. And maybe that goal isn't that you're doing. I used to do Socratic seminars all the time. The first September and October, my goodness, it was the most terrible thing. I was like, nobody come into this classroom right now, right? Because it's supposed to be bad. It is supposed to be bad in the beginning because you're training them, right, to get that academic conversation going with like 25 to 30 kids, right? But by the end of the year, they used to be like, you need to sit down because we got this. At the board taking notes, they took over the classroom, right? And it's also about that journey. It is about learning across time. So if we're engaging with students, right, and they're not necessarily engaging in the full group discussion because they probably don't know what to say, even like what that looks like, well, then we have to model it and we have to maybe like change the venue of it. Partnered conversation, small group conversation. God, like all I do is Slack all day. Like put them on some type of online digital platform, talk about college career, CCR skills, all of that. But like the thing is that collaboration, just because they're not talking, that doesn't mean you step away from that, because we know that emotional engagement is so critical to just being an engaged student. It really is. Working together, being collaborative, finding belonging in the classroom is really essential to effective learning.
Let's say that you're out there listening to this and you find that you are one of those people struggling.
Yeah.
I know I'm one of those too. If you are somebody that's lucky to have an instructional coach in your class, in your school, how do you approach them to get help before you bring in the administration, you know, before you get observed and stuff like that? How do you work with an instructional coach to support yourself as a teacher and as a learner? How do you suggest teachers get help with this?
That makes me sad because I think of it as the instructional coach. It's interesting how the teacher is going to the instructional coach, because I think it's the other way around, right? The instructional coach.
Look, I've been doing this for 20 plus years and I'm coming to you on this podcast going, I'm trying every day.
Yeah.
Right. Some days you got it. Some days you don't. Some lessons you got. I know tomorrow's lesson is going to be what, right? So how do you seek that help if you know that you're out there going, okay, everything that's happening on this podcast is resonating with me?
So, I mean, I'm hoping that this answer is not for the teachers. This answer is for the administrators and for the coaches. And that is to say, we need to allow adults and allow teachers to learn in the classroom. It is too high stakes. We know that teaching is high stakes, but going back to the grading question, right? And going back to just like learning and the ladder analogy, there's a curve to learning, right? And I have always, in my experience, from my position as a coach, from an administrator, from a teacher, from even like that transparency, like there were lessons where I was like, two students, how did that go? That was terrible. Right? And I'm like, thank you. I'm going to come back tomorrow. I'm going to try it again. And they were like, thank you for that transparency. We'll do it. Right. I think we need to allow learning to be learning, and learning is messy. Here we are. We're trying to even like contain what engagement is, right? We have this entire national insights report that tells us that we don't know how to define it. We don't know how to measure it, but we know it's important. Change is slow, even though we want it to be fast, but this is too important. Students are too important. Teachers are too important to not allow that messy, complex, beautiful process of learning to happen. And I think for those coaches and for those administrators at time, we're very quick to be like, okay, go into a classroom and rate it on some made up scale and then say, this is not productive, right? And it's not about that point in time. It's about the latter. It is about taking where students are, taking where teachers are, and just slowly and gradually pushing them on the learning curve. So I would say for teachers to continue to advocate for themselves as learners as well, and really push on the complexities of what teaching, everything that teaching really encompasses, because it is a process even for them.
Talking today to Nicole Santora from Discovery Education. And, you know, we've been talking about this amazing document that you guys published. Where can we go to find it? What's the website and how can we take advantage of it?
Yeah, so it's found on discoveryeducation.com. We've been posting it on LinkedIn. Just keep your eye out. We're doing really cool things within the company. We're really diving into all the research, which is where we're at with the HQIM landscape, the learning science landscape that we're currently in. So I would say just keep an eye on us because we have good things to come.
And when we're over at discoveryeducation.com, what are some of the other things that we can do there? What can we learn? What are some of the other hot topics these days at Discovery Education?
We're doing a lot with college and career readiness, so I would definitely check that out. Definitely looking through the lens, even I'm working within product teams even right now, to think about kind of a layered approach. So making sure that we're also embedding kind of educative features. I think we're at the point too, we actually just did a learn cycle also on adult learning. And we're at the point where it's like a lot of our products, this isn't just Discovery, this is across the entire nation, where we have curriculum or we have products. And they always come with a teacher guide. And then the teacher is like, I didn't have time to read your 75-page teacher guide. We're like, yes, we understand. And it's really about starting to build those educative features into the products, into the curriculum. So that is another thing that we're really kind of working on right now. So I would just say keep an eye out for those two. Still doing a lot of media production, which is really cool. Knowing that we are taking what we know about student engagement and aligning that also with content creation, right? I think that there's been that illusion that activity first or that content first kind of learning design. So putting those together and really finding where, you know, where the content creation, like where us, you know, Discovery as an organization that came out of a media company really can utilize and galvanize learning through some of the media pieces that we are producing. So
we're going to make sure that we have links to everything over here on our show notes. Of course, you can find more information over about our show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify and YouTube. Nicole, thank you so much for coming on the show. Please make this your first time. Would love to have you back on the show. And maybe we can do this with some more instructional coaches and really deep dive into this subject. There's so much that we can unpack here. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jeff.
And that wraps up this episode of Digital Learning Today. On behalf of Nicole and everybody here on TeacherCast, my name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.